Listening Library presents Magic Treehouse, Book Number 7, Sunset of the Sabretooth, by Mary Pope Osborne. Read for you by the author.
Prologue. One summer day in Frog Creek, Pennsylvania, a mysterious treehouse appeared in the woods. 8-year-old Jack and his 7-year-old sister Annie climbed into the treehouse. They found it was filled with books. Jack and Annie soon discovered that the treehouse was magic. It could take them to the places in the books. All they had to do was to point to a picture and wish to go there. Jack and Annie visited dinosaurs, knights, an Egyptian queen, pirates, ninjas, and the Amazon rainforest. Along the way, they discovered that the treehouse belonged to Morgan Le Fay. Morgan was a magical librarian. She traveled through time and space, gathering books for King Arthur's library. On their 5th adventure, in Night of the Ninjas, Jack and Annie found a little mouse in the treehouse. Annie named their new friend Peanut. Jack and Annie also found a note from Morgan. The note told them that she was under a spell. To free her, Jack and Annie must find 4 special things. They found the first thing in old Japan and the second in the Amazon rainforest. Now, Jack and Annie and Peanut are about to set out in search of the third thing in Sunset of the Sabretooth. Chapter 1. The M Things.
"Let's go to the treehouse," said Annie. She and Jack were passing the Frog Creek Woods on their way home from their swimming class at the Y.
"No, I want to go home and change out of my bathing suit," said Jack.
"Oh, that'll take too long," said Annie. "Don't you want to save Morgan as soon as possible?"
"Of course," said Jack.
"Then come on before the sun sets," said Annie.
She darted into the woods. Jack sighed. He gave up on the idea of changing out of his bathing suit. He pushed his glasses into place. He followed Annie into the Frog Creek Woods. The warm air smelled fresh and green. He moved through patches of sunlight and shadow. Soon he came to a small clearing. He looked up. There it was, the magic treehouse in the tallest tree in the woods.
"Hurry,"
called Annie. She was climbing the rope ladder up to the treehouse. Jack grabbed the ladder. He started up after her. Finally, they reached the treehouse.
"Squeak!"
A mouse sat on the windowsill.
"Hi, Peanut,"
cried Annie. Jack patted the tiny head.
"Sorry we didn't come sooner," Annie said, "but we had to go to our swimming lesson." "Squeak!"
"What happened while we were gone?" asked Annie, looking around the treehouse. Jack stared at the large M carved into the wooden floor. On the M were a moonstone and a mango, the special things they'd found on their last 2 journeys.
"Hey, guess what?" said Jack. "Moonstone and mango start with the letter M, just like Morgan."
"You're right," said Annie.
"I bet all 4 things start with an M," said Jack.
"Right," said Annie. "I wonder where we'll find the next one."
She and Jack stared at the stacks of books in the treehouse, books on the Amazon rainforest, ninjas, pirates, mummies, knights, and dinosaurs. All of them were closed. Only 1 book lay open in the corner.
"We're just about to find out," said Jack.
They walked over to the open book. They looked at the page the book was open to. It showed a picture of rocks and snow.
"Wow," said Annie, running her finger over the picture. "I love snow. I wish we could go there right now."
"Wait," said Jack. "We're not prepared. Then he had another thought. And we're wearing our bathing suits. Stop!
Oops, said Annie. Too late. The wind started to blow. The leaves started to shake. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was silent. It was as silent as the falling snow. Chapter 2. Bones. Jack, Annie, and Peanut looked outside. Snow was falling from a gray sky. The treehouse was in the tallest tree in a grove of tall bare trees. The grove was on a wide white plain. Beyond the plain were high rocky cliffs.
I'm cold, said Annie. Her teeth chattered.
She wrapped her towel tightly around her.
Squeak!
Peanut sounded cold, too.
Poor mouse, said Annie. I'll put you into Jack's pack. You'll be warmer there.
Annie slipped Peanut into the pocket of the backpack.
We have to go home, said Jack. We need warmer clothes. We can't go home, said Annie. We can't find the Pennsylvania book, not until our mission is complete. Remember? That's the way the magic works.
Oh, right, said Jack. He looked around. There was no sign of the Pennsylvania book that always took them home. Annie peered out the window again.
Where are we anyway? She asked.
I'll find out, said Jack. He picked up the open book and read the title on the cover. Life in the Ice Age.
Ice Age, said Annie. No wonder we're cold.
We better find the third M thing soon, said Jack, before we freeze to death.
Look, whispered Annie. People.
She pointed out the window. Jack saw them, too. Four figures on a cliff. Two big figures and two little ones, all holding long spears.
Who are they? Said Annie.
I'll look in the book, said Jack. He found a picture of some people. He read the caption to Annie. Early modern humans were called Cro-Magnons. During the late Ice Age in Europe, they sometimes lived in caves beneath cliffs.
Why are they carrying spears? Said Annie.
Jack turned the page. He found another picture of the Cro-Magnons. He read aloud. The Cro-Magnon family often hunted together. They covered deep pits with branches. Then they drove reindeer and mammoths into the traps.
Oh, trapping the animals, that's sad, said Annie.
No, it's not, said Jack. They couldn't live without hunting. They didn't have supermarkets, you know. They watched the family disappear over the other side of the cliff. Come on, I'm freezing, said Jack. Let's hurry and find the M thing while the Cro-Magnons are hunting.
But I want to meet them, said Annie.
Forget it, said Jack. They don't have books that tell them about us. They'll think we're some enemy and hurl their spears.
Yikes,
said Annie. Jack put his book away.
Squeak!
Peanut peeked out of the backpack.
Stay in there, said Annie.
Jack pulled on his pack and started down the rope ladder. Annie followed. On the icy ground, they huddled together. The wind was biting. Jack put his towel over his head. Snow blew against his glasses.
Hey, Jack, said Annie. Look at me.
Annie had put on her swimming goggles.
Now I can see, she said.
Good thinking, said Jack. Now cover your head with your towel. Most of your body heat is lost through your head. Annie wrapped her towel around her head. We should find a cave or someplace warmer, said Jack.
I bet there are caves in those cliffs, said Annie.
She and Jack started across the white plain. The snow wasn't deep yet, but the wind was blowing hard.
I told you!
Annie pointed to an opening in the rocks, a cave. They ran to it. Careful, said Jack. They stepped carefully into the shadowy cave. It was only slightly warmer inside, but at least the wind wasn't blowing.
In the gray light, they stamped the snow off their sneakers. Annie took off her goggles. "It smells in here," said Jack.
"Yeah, like a wet dog," said Annie.
"Let me see what I can find out," said Jack. He pulled out the Ice Age book.
"I'll look around," said Annie. "Maybe the M thing is here. Then we can go home and get warm."
Jack stood by the entrance so he could read the book.
"This cave is filled with sticks," Annie said.
"What?" said Jack. He didn't look up from the book.
"No, wait. I think they're bones," said Annie.
"Bones?" echoed Jack.
"Yeah, lots of them back here, all over the floor."
Jack turned the pages of his book. He found a picture of a cave filled with bones.
"I hear something,"
said Annie. Jack read the writing below the picture of the cave. It said, "The great cave bears of the Ice Age were over 8 feet tall. These bears were larger and fiercer than today's grizzlies. Their caves were filled with the bones of their ancestors."
"Annie," whispered Jack, "get back here now."
They were in the cave of a great cave bear. Chapter 3, Brr.
"Annie,"
whispered Jack again. No answer. He put his book quietly into his pack. He stepped deeper into the cave.
"Annie,"
he said a little louder. Jack stepped on the bones. The wet dog smell grew stronger. He kept going deeper into the smelly blackness. He ran into something. He gasped.
"Jack,"
said Annie,
"is that you? Didn't you hear me calling?"
Jack whispered.
"We have to get out of here." "Wait,"
she said.
"Someone's sleeping back there. Hear him snoring?"
Jack heard a low, deep moaning. It was loud, then soft. Loud, then soft.
"That's not a person," he said. "It's a great cave bear."
A booming snore shattered the air.
"Yikes," said Annie.
"Go, go," said Jack. He and Annie ran through the cave, over the bones, and out into the falling snow. They kept on going. They ran between fallen rocks and under jagged cliffs. Finally, they stopped and turned around. All they could see was snow and rocks and their own footprints. No bear.
"Phew," said Annie. "That was lucky."
"Yeah," said Jack. "He probably never even woke up. We just got in a panic." Annie huddled close to Jack.
"Brr, I'm freezing," she said.
"Me too," he said. He took off his glasses to wipe off the snow. The cold wind blew against his bare legs.
"Wow,"
Annie said.
"Look."
She pointed to something behind Jack.
"What?"
Jack put his glasses back on and turned around. Under a cliff was a wide ledge. Under the ledge was another cave. Only this cave seemed to have a golden glow. This one looked cozy and safe and warm. Chapter 4, Cave Kids. Jack and Annie crept to the cave and peeked inside. A small flame danced from a bed of glowing coals. Near the fire were knives, axes, and hollowed-out stones. Animal skins were neatly stacked against the wall.
"People must live here," said Annie.
"Maybe it's the home of the Cro-Magnons we saw," said Jack, looking around.
"Let's go inside and get warm," said Annie.
Jack and Annie moved quickly to the fire and warmed their hands. Their shadows danced on the stone walls. Jack pulled out his Ice Age book. He found a picture of a cave. He read, Cro-Magnons made many things from animals, plants, and stone. They made flute-like musical instruments from mammoth bones. They made ropes by braiding plant fibers. They made axes and knives from stone. Jack pulled out his notebook and pencil. He started a list. Cro-Magnons made bone flutes, plant ropes, stone axes, and knives. "Ta-da!" said Annie. Jack looked up. Annie was wearing a coat. It had a hood and long sleeves. It went all the way down to her sneakers.
"Where did you get that?" said Jack.
"From that pile of furry skins," said Annie, pointing. "These must be their clothes. Maybe they're being mended."
She picked up another coat and handed it to Jack.
"Try one, it's really warm," she said.
Jack put his backpack and towel down on the hard dirt floor. He slipped on the coat.
It did feel very warm and soft.
"We look like cave kids," said Annie.
"Squeak!"
Peanut peeked out of Jack's pack lying on the floor.
"You stay in there," said Annie. "There's no teeny coat for you."
Peanut vanished back into the pack.
"I wonder how they made these coats," said Jack.
He turned the pages in the book until he found a picture of Cro-Magnon women sewing. He read, "Cro-Magnon scraped reindeer skins with flint rocks to make them soft. They used bone needles to sew the skins together for clothing." Jack added to his list, "Reindeer skin clothes."
"I hope the cave people won't mind if we borrow their coats," said Jack.
"Maybe we should give them our towels," said Annie, "to thank them."
"Good idea."
"And my goggles, too," said Annie.
They left their gifts on top of the rest of the animal skins.
"Let's explore the cave before they come home," said Jack.
"It's too dark in the back," said Annie. "We won't be able to see anything."
"Well, I'll find out how Cro-Magnon saw in the dark," said Jack.
He opened the Ice Age book. He found a picture of cave people holding odd-looking lamps. He read aloud to Annie. "Cro-Magnons made stone lamps. They hollowed out a rock, filled it with animal fat, then burned a wick made from moss."
"There," said Annie.
She pointed to two stones near the fire. In the hollow of each was gooey white stuff and a pile of moss.
"We have to be careful," said Jack.
He picked up one stone. It was smaller than a soup bowl, but much heavier. Jack held the stone close to the fire and lit the piece of moss. He lit another lamp and gave it to Annie.
"Carry it with two hands," he said.
"I know," she said.
Jack tucked the book under his arm. He and Annie carried their stone lamps to the back of the cave.
"Hey, I wonder where this goes," said Annie.
She held her lamp up to an opening in the wall.
"I'll check in the book," said Jack.
He put down his lamp and flipped through the Ice Age book.
"I think it's a tunnel," she said. "Be right back."
"Wait a second," said Jack.
Too late. She had squeezed into the opening and was gone.
"Oh, brother," said Jack, sighing.
He closed his book and peeked into the opening.
"Come back here," he said.
"No, you come here," said Annie.
Her voice sounded far away.
"You won't believe this."
Jack picked up his lamp and book. He ducked into a small tunnel.
"Wow,"
came Annie's voice. Jack could see her lamp flickering at the other end. Crouching down, he hurried toward her. At the end of the tunnel was a huge cavern with a high ceiling. Annie held her lamp close to the wall.
"Look,"
she said. Her voice echoed. Animals were painted on the wall in strokes of red and black and yellow. There were cave bears and lions, elk and reindeer, bison and woolly rhinos
and mammoths. In the flickering light, the prehistoric beasts looked alive.
Chapter 5. Snow Tracks.
"Wow, what is this place?" said Jack.
"Maybe it's an art gallery," said Annie.
"I don't think so," said Jack. "It's too hard to get to."
He read about the cave paintings. These Ice Age beasts were painted 25,000 years ago. Cro-Magnons painted pictures of animals they hunted. They may have believed the paintings would give them power over the animals.
"Wow, look at this," said Annie.
She pointed at a painting farther down the wall. It showed a figure with human arms and legs, reindeer antlers, and an owl face. It seemed to be holding a flute. Jack looked at the book again. He found a picture of the figure and read, "Cavemen may have been led by a sorcerer or master of the animals. He may have worn reindeer antlers so he could run like a reindeer, and an owl mask so he could see like an owl."
"What is it?" said Annie.
"The master of the animals," said Jack. "He's a sorcerer."
"Oh, wow,"
breathed Annie.
"That's it."
"That's what?"
"That's who we have to find."
"Why?"
"Maybe he's a friend of Morgan's," said Annie.
Jack nodded slowly.
"Maybe," he said.
"Let's go find him," said Annie.
They went back through the tunnel into the first cave.
"We better put our lamps back," said Jack.
He and Annie blew out their lamps. They placed them back by the fire. Jack's backpack was on the floor next to the skins. He put the Ice Age book into it.
"How's Peanut?"
said Annie. Jack looked into his pack.
"She's not here," he said.
"Oh, no," cried Annie. "She must have crawled out when we were looking at the paintings."
"Peanut," Jack called.
"Peanut,"
called Annie. Annie walked slowly around the cave, looking into the shadows. Jack peered around the fire and under each of the furry skins.
"Jack, come here,"
said Annie. She was standing near the entrance to the cave. The snow had stopped falling. In the snow were tiny tracks. Chapter 6. Song on the Wind.
"Peanut's tracks," said Annie. "We have to find her before she freezes."
She wrapped her reindeer coat around her and headed across the snow. Jack pulled on his backpack and followed. The mouse's tracks led them between the fallen rocks and back onto the open plain. The wind blew harder. Snow swirled over the ground, covering the tiny footprints.
"I can't see them anymore," wailed Annie.
She and Jack now stood in the middle of the plain. They stared at the windswept snow. The mouse's tracks had vanished.
"Yikes,"
whispered Annie, staring up. Jack followed her gaze. On one of the cliffs was a tiger, a giant tiger with two long, sharp fangs.
"A saber tooth," said Jack.
"I hope he doesn't see us," whispered Annie.
"Me too,"
Jack whispered back.
"We better head back to the treehouse."
Jack and Annie stepped very softly across the snow. Then Jack glanced back at the cliff. The saber tooth was gone.
"Oh, man," he said. "Where is he?"
"Run to the trees," said Annie.
He and Annie started running. They ran over the snowy plain, heading toward the tall, bare trees in the distance. Suddenly, Jack heard a crack. The ground caved in, and Jack went with it. Annie fell beside him. They crashed down onto a heap of branches, snow, and earth. They struggled to stand. Jack pushed his glasses into place. "You all right?" he asked Annie.
"Yes,"
she said. They both looked up. They were in a deep hole.
All Jack could see were gray clouds moving overhead.
"This is a trap," Jack said. "The Cro-Magnons must have put branches over this hole. Then the snow hid the branches, so we didn't see them."
"There's no way out," said Annie.
She was right. They were helpless. The pit was too deep to climb out of.
"I feel like a trapped animal," Annie said.
"Me too," said Jack. He heard a yowl in the distance.
"The saber tooth," whispered Annie.
Jack pulled out the Ice Age book. He found a picture of the saber tooth. He read, "The saber tooth was the fiercest beast of the Ice Age. It attacked humans as well as woolly mammoths and other large animals."
"Oh, brother," said Jack.
"Listen,"
Annie grabbed him.
"What?"
Jack jumped.
"I hear music."
Jack listened, but all he heard was the wind.
"You hear it?"
said Annie.
"No,"
said Jack.
"Listen carefully."
He closed his eyes. He listened very carefully. He heard the wind, but this time he heard another sound too. Strange, haunting music.
"Ah!"
cried Annie. Jack opened his eyes. Staring down at them was a figure wearing reindeer antlers and an owl mask.
"The sorcerer,"
whispered Jack.
"Squeak!"
Peanut peered down at them too. Chapter 7. The Sorcerer's Gift. The sorcerer didn't speak. He stared through the eye holes of the owl mask.
"Help us, please,"
said Annie. The sorcerer threw a rope into the pit. Jack grabbed it.
"He wants to pull us up,"
said Annie. Jack looked up. The sorcerer was gone.
"Where did he go?"
Jack said.
"Tug on the rope,"
said Annie. Jack tugged. The rope tightened. It began rising.
"I'll go first," said Annie cheerfully.
"Annie, this isn't a game," warned Jack.
"Don't worry, I'll be careful."
Jack gave her the rope.
"Okay, but hold on tight," he said.
Annie held the rope with both hands. She pushed her feet against the side of the pit. She rose into the air with the rope. She kept pressing against the side of the pit until she reached the top. Jack saw the sorcerer reappear and help Annie up. Then they moved out of sight. Jack was puzzled. The sorcerer had used both hands to help Annie. So who held the other end of the rope?
"Wow!"
came Annie's voice.
"What's going on?"
Jack wondered. The sorcerer came back and threw the rope down again. Jack grabbed it, and the rope started to rise. Jack held on tight. He started up. His hands burned. His arms felt as if they were being pulled out of their sockets. But he kept his hold on the rope and his feet against the side of the pit. At the top, the sorcerer pulled Jack onto the snowy ground.
"Thanks," said Jack, standing.
The sorcerer was tall. He wore a long fur robe. Jack could see only his eyes through the owl mask.
"Hey!"
Annie called. Jack turned. Annie was sitting on a woolly mammoth.
"Squeak!"
Peanut was sitting on the mammoth's head. The mammoth looked like a giant elephant with shaggy reddish hair and long curved tusks. The other end of the rope was around the mammoth's huge neck.
"Lulu pulled us up,"
said Annie. "Lulu?" said Jack.
"Don't you think she looks like a Lulu?"
said Annie.
"Oh, brother,"
said Jack. He walked up to the mammoth.
"Hey, mammoth starts with M,"
said Annie.
"Maybe Lulu's the special thing."
"I don't think so," said Jack.
The great creature knelt down just like a circus elephant.
"Whoa,"
said Annie. She clutched the mammoth's ears to keep from falling off. The sorcerer helped Jack climb onto the mammoth.
"Thanks," said Jack.
Then the sorcerer reached into a pouch. He pulled out a smooth, white bone and handed it to Jack. The bone was hollow. It had four holes along one side and two on the other.
"Oh, man, I think it's his flute," said Jack. "The book said they make flutes from mammoth bones."
Jack tried to give the flute back to the sorcerer.
"Nice," he said politely, but the sorcerer held up his hand.
"He wants you to keep the mammoth bone," said Annie.
"Mammoth bone," whispered Jack. "Hey, maybe this is the third thing."
Jack looked at the sorcerer.
"Do you know Morgan?" he asked.
The sorcerer did not answer, but his eyes sparkled with kindness. He turned away from Jack and untied the mammoth's rope. Then he whispered in the ear of the giant woolly creature. When the mammoth stood up, Jack gripped Annie's coat to keep from falling off. He felt miles above the ground. He nestled behind Annie in the dip between the mammoth's head and huge curved back. The mammoth took slow, plodding steps across the snow, then picked up speed.
"Where are we going?" said Jack as they bumped up and down.
"To the treehouse," said Annie.
"How does he know where it is?" said Jack.
"She just knows," said Annie.
Jack looked back. The sorcerer was standing in the snow watching them. But at that moment, the clouds parted and the sun came out. Jack was blinded by sunlight on the snow. He squinted to see, but the sorcerer had vanished. Chapter 8, The Great Parade. The huge mammoth walked across the open plain.
"Look,"
said Annie. She pointed to a herd of elk in the distance. They had great wide antlers.
"There," said Jack, as a herd of reindeer came into view. They pranced gracefully across the snow.
Then a woolly rhino joined them on the open plain. Then a bison. The elk, reindeer, rhino, and bison moved along with them at a distance. They seemed to be escorting Jack and Annie back to the treehouse. The snow sparkled with sunlight.
"This is a great parade," Jack thought. "Fantastic."
They were getting closer and closer to the grove of tall trees.
"I told you," said Annie. "Lulu's taking us home."
But just then, the mammoth let out a cry. All the other animals bounded off. Peanut started to squeak. Jack looked around. Behind them, the saber tooth was slinking across the sunlit snow. The woolly mammoth roared and plunged forward. Jack and Annie nearly fell off. Jack clutched Annie. She and Peanut clutched the mammoth's shaggy hair. The mammoth thundered wildly over the ground.
"Ah!"
Jack and Annie yelled. The mammoth charged to the grove of trees, but the tiger had circled around the trees. He stood between the tallest tree and the mammoth. They were trapped. The saber-tooth began moving slowly toward the mammoth. The woolly mammoth roared fiercely. But Jack knew a saber-tooth could kill any creature, including a mammoth. The huge tiger's head was down. His burning eyes were fixed on the mammoth. His long, white fangs glinted in the sunlight. Chapter 9, Master of the Animals. The saber-tooth crept forward. Jack stared in horror.
"Play the flute," whispered Annie.
"Is she nuts?" Jack thought.
"Try," said Annie.
Jack held the mammoth bone flute to his lips. He blew. The flute made a strange sound. The tiger froze. He glared at Jack. Jack's hands shook. The tiger growled. He took another step. The mammoth roared and stomped the ground.
"Play it," said Annie. "Keep playing."
Jack blew again. The saber-tooth froze again. Jack kept blowing until he ran out of breath. The tiger snarled.
He's still here, whispered Annie. Keep it up.
Jack closed his eyes. He took a deep breath. Then he blew as hard and as long as he could. He covered and uncovered the holes on the bone. The music sounded strange, as if it were coming from another world.
He's leaving,
Annie whispered. Jack raised his eyes. The saber tooth was slinking off toward the cliffs.
We did it, said Annie.
Jack lowered the flute. He felt very tired. The mammoth waved her trunk happily.
To the treehouse, Lulu, said Annie.
The woolly mammoth snorted. Then she lumbered over to the tallest tree. From the back of the mammoth, Jack grabbed the rope ladder. He held it for Annie. She stroked the mammoth's giant ear.
Bye, Lulu. Thank you, she said.
Annie grabbed the rope ladder. Then she started up. Peanut climbed up, too. After they disappeared into the treehouse, Jack climbed onto the ladder. He looked back at the woolly mammoth.
Bye, girl, he said. Go home now, and watch out for the saber tooth.
The mammoth walked away into the sunset. When Jack couldn't see her anymore, he started up the rope ladder. He pulled himself into the treehouse.
Ta-da!
Said Annie. She handed the Pennsylvania book to Jack. Jack smiled. Now he was positive they had found the third M thing. Their mission was complete.
Before we leave, we have to give our coats back, said Annie.
All right, said Jack.
They took off their reindeer skin coats and dropped them to the ground.
Brr, said Annie. I hope the Cro-Magnon people find them.
Jack stared out the window. He wanted to take one last look at the prehistoric world. The sun was setting behind the hills. Four people were crossing the snowy plain. It was the Cro-Magnon family.
Hey!
Shouted Annie.
Shh! Said Jack.
The Cro-Magnon stopped and peered in Annie and Jack's direction.
We left your reindeer skins down there.
Annie pointed to the ground. The tallest person stepped forward and raised a spear.
Time to go, said Jack.
He grabbed the Pennsylvania book. He found the picture of Frog Creek and pointed at it.
I wish we could go home, he said.
Goodbye, good luck,
Annie called, waving out the window. The wind started to blow, and the treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 10, This Age. Birds sang. The air was soft and warm.
I hope they find their coats, said Annie.
Me too,
said Jack. He pushed his glasses into place.
Squeak. Hey, you, how did you find the sorcerer?
Annie asked Peanut.
Squeak. It's a secret, huh?
Said Annie. She turned to Jack.
Where's the flute?
He held up the mammoth bone. Then he placed it on the M, carved into the floor. Next to the mango from the rainforest. Next to the moonstone from the time of ninjas.
Moonstone, mango, mammoth bone, Annie said. We need just one more M thing. Then Morgan will be free from her spell.
Tomorrow, said Jack.
Annie patted Peanut on the head.
Bye, you,
she said. She started down the rope ladder. Jack gathered his things. He paused and glanced at the mouse. She stared at him with big brown eyes.
Thanks again for helping us, he said.
Then he climbed down the rope ladder and jumped onto the ground. Jack and Annie ran through the Frog Creek woods onto their street. Their neighborhood looked rosy in the sunset.
It's great to be back in this age, Jack thought. Warm and safe and almost home. I'm glad we don't have to go hunting for dinner, he said.
Yeah, Mom and Dad already did that, said Annie, at the supermarket.
I hope they trapped some spaghetti and meatballs, said Jack.
I hope they trapped a pizza, said Annie.
Hurry, I'm starving, said Jack. They ran up their sidewalk and through their front door.
We're home, shouted Annie.
What's for dinner? Shouted Jack.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Magic Treehouse, Book Number 7, Sunset of the Sabretooth, by Mary Pope Osborne. This program was directed by Lewis Milgram. Executive producer, Laura Wilson. Text copyright 1996 by Mary Pope Osborne. Production copyright 1996, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Listening Library presents Magic Treehouse, Book Number 8, Midnight on the Moon, by Mary Pope Osborne. Read for you by the author.
Prologue. One summer day, in Frog Creek, Pennsylvania, a mysterious treehouse appeared in the woods. 8-year-old Jack and his 7-year-old sister Annie climbed into the treehouse. The treehouse was filled with books, and it was magic. It could go any place that was in a book. All Jack and Annie had to do was to point to a picture and wish to go there. They visited dinosaurs, knights, an Egyptian queen, pirates, ninjas, and the Amazon rainforest. Along the way, they discovered that the treehouse belonged to Morgan Le Fay. Morgan was a magical librarian from the time of King Arthur. She traveled through time and space, gathering books for her library. One day, Jack and Annie found a note that said Morgan was under a spell. Jack and Annie set out in the magic treehouse to find 4 special things that would free her. With the help of a mouse named Peanut, Jack and Annie found the first thing in old Japan, the second in the Amazon rainforest, and the third in the Ice Age. Now, Jack, Annie, and Peanut are ready to find the last thing in Midnight on the Moon. Chapter 1, by Moonlight.
Jack,
whispered a voice. Jack opened his eyes. He saw a figure in the moonlight.
Wake up! Get dressed!
It was his sister, Annie. Jack turned on his lamp. He rubbed his eyes. Annie was standing beside his bed. She wore jeans and a sweatshirt.
Let's go to the treehouse, she said.
What time is it? Asked Jack. He put on his glasses.
Don't look at your clock, said Annie.
Jack looked at his clock.
Oh, man, he said. It's midnight. It's too dark. No, it isn't. The moon makes it bright enough to see, said Annie.
Wait till morning, said Jack.
No, now, said Annie. We have to find the fourth M thing. I have a feeling that the full moon might help us.
That's nuts, said Jack. I want to sleep.
You can sleep when we come back home, said Annie. No time will have passed.
Jack sighed. Oh, brother, he said, but he got out of bed.
Yay, whispered Annie. Meet you at the back door.
She tiptoed out of Jack's room. Jack yawned. He pulled on his jeans and sneakers and a sweatshirt. He put his notebook and pencil into his backpack, then he crept down the stairs. Annie opened the back door. Quietly, they stepped outside. Wait, said Jack. We need a flashlight.
No, we don't. I told you, the moon will light our way, said Annie,
and she took off. Jack sighed, then followed her. Annie was right, thought Jack. The moon was so bright that he could see his shadow. Everything seemed washed with silver. Soon they left their street. Annie led the way into the Frog Creek woods. It was much darker under the shadows of the trees. Jack looked up, searching for the treehouse.
There, said Annie.
The magic treehouse was shining in the moonlight. Annie grabbed the rope ladder and started climbing up.
Careful, go slowly, said Jack.
He followed her up the ladder and into the treehouse. Moonlight streamed through the window. It shone on the letter M that shimmered on the wooden floor. It shone on the three M things that rested on the M. A moonstone from the time of the ninjas, a mango from the Amazon rainforest, and a mammoth bone from the Ice Age.
We need just one more M thing, said Annie, to free Morgan from her spell.
Squeak!
Peanut, said Annie.
In the dim light, Jack saw a tiny mouse. She sat on an open book.
You didn't expect to see us this late, did you? Said Annie.
She picked up Peanut, and Jack picked up the open book.
So where are we going this time? Annie asked him.
Jack held the book up to the moonlight.
Uh-oh, he said. I knew we should have brought a flashlight. I can't read a thing.
He could make out diagrams and shadowy pictures, but he couldn't read a word.
Look at the cover, said Annie.
The letters were bigger on the cover. Jack squinted at them. It's called Hello Moon, he said.
Annie gasped.
We're going to the moon?
Of course not, said Jack. It's impossible to go to the moon without tons of equipment.
Why?
There's no air. We couldn't breathe. Not only that, we'd boil to death if it was day and freeze to death if it was night.
Yikes, said Annie. So where do you think we are going?
Maybe a place where people train to be astronauts, said Jack.
That sounds neat, said Annie.
Yeah, said Jack.
He'd always wanted to meet astronauts and space scientists.
So say the wish, said Annie.
Jack opened the book again. He pointed to a picture of a dome-shaped structure.
I wish we could go there, he said.
The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster and faster. Then everything was silent. Absolutely silent. As quiet and still as silence could be. Chapter 2. Space Motel. Jack opened his eyes. He looked out the window. The treehouse had landed inside a large white room.
What kind of training place is this? Asked Annie.
I don't know, said Jack.
The room was round. It had no windows. It had white floors and a curved wall lit by bright lights.
Hello,
Annie called. There was no answer.
Where were all the astronauts and space scientists? Jack wondered.
There's nobody here, said Annie.
How do you know? Said Jack.
I just feel it, said Annie.
We'd better find out where we are, said Jack.
He looked at the page in the moon book. He read the words below the picture of the dome. A moon base was built on the moon in the year 2031. The top of the dome slides open to let spacecrafts enter and leave.
Oh, man, Jack whispered. What's wrong?
Said Annie. Jack's heart pounded with excitement. He could hardly speak.
We've landed inside a moon base, he said.
So?
Said Annie.
So the moon base is on the moon, said Jack. Annie's eyes widened.
We're on the moon? She asked.
Jack nodded.
The book says the moon base was built in the year 2031, he said. So this book
was written after that, which means this book is from the future.
Oh, wow, said Annie. Morgan must have gone forward in time to borrow it from a future library.
Right, said Jack. And now we're in the future on the moon.
Squeak, squeak.
Annie and Jack looked at Peanut. The mouse was running around in circles.
Poor Peanut, said Annie.
She tried to pick the mouse up, but Peanut hid behind the mango on the letter M.
Maybe she's nervous about being on the moon, said Annie.
She's not the only one, said Jack.
He let out a deep breath, then he pushed his glasses into place.
So what's a moon base? Asked Annie.
Jack looked at the book. He read aloud. When scientists visit the moon for short periods, they eat and sleep in the moon base.
A space motel, said Annie.
I guess, said Jack.
He read more.
The small base has a landing chamber and a room for storing spacesuits. Air and temperature controls make breathing possible.
So that's why we can breathe, Jack said.
Let's explore, said Annie. We have to find the fourth thing for Morgan.
No, first we should study this map, said Jack.
He pulled out his notebook.
You study it, said Annie.
Jack copied the map. Then he drew in the treehouse.
Okay, he said.
He pointed at the X in his drawing.
We're here.
Jack looked up. Annie was gone.
Oh, brother, Jack said.
As usual, she had left without him before they could even make a plan. Jack put the moon book and pencil into his pack. Carrying his notebook and backpack, he started out the window.
Squeak, squeak.
Jack looked back at Peanut. The mouse was running back and forth on the M.
Stay here and be safe, said Jack. We'll be back soon.
Jack swung himself over the windowsill. His feet touched the floor of the landing chamber.
Annie, he called.
There was no answer. Jack looked at his diagram. It showed only one way to go. Jack walked along the curved white wall to the stairs. He climbed the steps to a hallway.
Jack, hurry!
Annie was at the end of the hallway, standing in the airlock. She peered out a window in a giant door. Jack hurried toward her. Annie stepped aside so he could look out the window, too.
Oh, man,
said Jack. What he saw took his breath away. He stared at a rocky gray land. The land was filled with giant craters and tall mountains. The sun was shining, but the sky was ink black.
Say hi to the moon,
Annie said softly. Chapter 3, Open Sesame.
The fourth M thing must be out there, said Annie.
Beside the door was a button with the word open on it. Annie reached for the button.
Wait, Jack grabbed her hand. There's no air on the moon, remember?
Oh, right. But we have to go out to find the M thing.
Let's see what the book says, said Jack.
He pulled the book out of his pack. He flipped through it until he found a page that showed the surface of the moon. He read aloud.
It takes 14 Earth days to equal one day on the moon. No air protects the moon from the sun's rays, so daytime heat reaches 260 degrees.
Jack looked at Annie.
I told you, our blood would boil if we went out there, he said.
Yuck, she said. Jack read from the book again.
Moon scientists wear spacesuits which have controls to keep them from getting too hot or too cold. They have tanks which provide air for 2 hours.
Where do we get spacesuits? Asked Annie.
She looked around and trotted back down the hall.
Maybe there.
Jack was studying his map. Let's try the spacesuit storeroom.
Don't look at the map, said Annie. Look at the real room.
Jack glanced up. Annie was peering through a doorway off the hall.
There's a ton of space stuff in here, she said.
Jack went to look. Bulky white suits hung from hangers. Air tanks, helmets, gloves, and boots sat in neat rows on shelves.
Wow, it's like the armor room in a castle, said Jack.
Yeah, with huge armor, said Annie.
Let's pick out the smallest stuff, said Jack. The suits can go over our clothes.
Annie found the smallest white suit, and Jack found the next smallest. They stepped into them. Then Annie locked Jack's air tank into place.
Thanks, he said, and he did the same for her.
Thanks, she said.
Gloves? Said Jack.
He and Annie pulled on white gloves.
Boots?
Said Annie. They each pulled on a pair of huge white boots.
Helmets? Said Jack.
He reached for a helmet.
Wow, they're pretty light, he said. I thought they'd be like knights' helmets.
Jack and Annie put the helmets on. They locked each other's into place.
I can't move my head right or left, said Annie.
Me neither, said Jack. Let's try walking.
Jack and Annie moved clumsily around the room. Jack felt like a fat snowman.
Close your visor, said Annie.
They both closed their see-through visors. Cool air filled Jack's helmet.
I can breathe, Annie yelled.
Her voice boomed in Jack's ears.
Ow, talk quietly, Jack said. We have two-way radios inside our helmets.
Sorry, whispered Annie.
Jack put the moon book back in his pack. Then he slung the pack over his shoulder.
Okay, he said. Remember, we only have 2 hours of air in our tanks, so we need to find the fourth M thing really fast.
I hope we can find it, said Annie.
Me too, said Jack.
He knew they could not go home until they did.
Let's go, said Annie.
She gave Jack a little push.
Watch it, no goofing off, he said. We don't want to fall over in these suits.
Just go, go, said Annie.
She pushed him out of the room. They walked back to the airlock.
Ready?
Said Annie.
Open sesame.
She pressed the open button. A door slowly slid closed behind them. A door opened in front of them, and Jack and Annie stepped out onto the moon. Chapter 4. Moon Rabbits.
Oh, wow,
said Annie. She took a step forward, but Jack stood frozen. He wanted to get a good look at everything first. He stared at the ground. He was standing in a layer of gray dust as fine as powder. Footprints were everywhere. Jack wondered who had made them. He reached into his pack for the moon book. To his surprise, it was as light as a feather. He found a picture of footprints on the moon. He read, "The moon has no rain or wind to blow the dust around, so footprints will never wear away naturally, not even in a billion years."
Oh, man, Jack said.
The moon was the stillest place he had ever, ever been. It was as still as a picture, and its stillness would never, ever end. Jack stared at the ink-black sky. A lovely blue and white ball glowed far away. Earth. For the first time it really hit Jack. They were in outer space.
Look!
Annie cried, laughing. She bounded past Jack, almost flying through the air. She landed on her feet. Then she jumped again.
I'm a moon rabbit, she called.
Jack laughed.
How does she do that? He wondered.
He turned a page and read, "A
person weighs less on the moon because of the moon's low gravity and lack of air. If you weigh 60 pounds on Earth, you would only weigh 10 pounds on the moon.
Don't just stand there reading,
said Annie, grabbing the book from Jack's gloved hand. She tossed it into space. It flew far away. Jack started after it. He bounded up and down. Boing, boing, boing. Now he felt as light as a feather.
Look, he called to Annie. I'm a moon rabbit, too.
Where Jack's boots hit the ground, moon dust gracefully sprayed into space. The book had landed at the edge of a shallow crater. When Jack reached it, he tried to stop, but his feet slipped. He fell right over and lay on his side. He tried to stand, but he was off balance. He tried again, but the dust was just too deep, and his spacesuit was too clumsy.
You okay? Asked Annie.
I can't get up, said Jack.
You shouldn't have been goofing off, said Annie wisely.
You goofed off first, said Jack. Now help me up, please.
Annie started toward him. Don't fall too, warned Jack.
I won't.
Annie moved very slowly. She half floated, half walked.
Give me your hand, she said.
Annie grabbed Jack's hand. She pressed her boot against his and pulled him up.
Thanks, he said.
No problem, she said. It was easy. You were really light.
Thank goodness, said Jack. It's impossible to get up alone.
He picked up the moon book. It was covered with dust. He brushed it off.
Oh, wow! Look,
said Annie. She stood at the edge of the crater.
What is it? Said Jack.
A moon buggy, said Annie.
The buggy was parked in the crater. It had four huge wheels.
Let's go for a ride, said Annie.
We can't, said Jack. We just have 2 hours of air in our tanks, remember?
I bet we'll find the M thing faster if we take the moon buggy.
Annie bounded into the crater.
But we can't drive, said Jack.
I bet I can drive this, said Annie. It looks easy. Come on.
She jumped into the driver's seat.
But you don't have a license, said Jack.
Who cares, said Annie. There aren't any roads on the moon or stoplights or policemen either.
She was right, Jack thought.
Well, go slow,
he said, and he climbed in beside her. Annie pushed a button labeled on. The moon buggy lurched backward.
Yikes, said Annie.
Step on the brake, said Jack.
Annie pressed a pedal on the floor. The buggy stopped with a jerk.
Phew,
she said.
It must be in reverse, said Jack. Let me study this.
But before he could study anything, Annie pushed another button. The buggy tilted back. Its front wheels started to rise into the air.
Let me out of here, said Jack.
Annie pushed more buttons. The buggy's front wheels landed back on the ground, and the buggy leaped forward.
Slower, said Jack.
I can't, said Annie. I don't know how.
Annie steered the buggy over the tracks on the ground. The wide wheels kept it from sinking into the deep dust.
Careful, said Jack.
The buggy zoomed out of the crater. Gray clouds of dust rose behind them as they took off across the moon. Chapter 5. Hang On. Annie drove the moon buggy over bumps and hollows. It bucked like a bronco.
I'm going through there,
she pointed to an opening between two mountains. Jack held onto the dashboard. The buggy bumped toward the opening and shot through. On the other side, the ground was even rockier.
Look for the fourth M thing, said Annie,
bouncing up and down. Jack groaned. Looking for anything on this wild ride was impossible.
Slow down, he said.
How?
Try pressing on the brake pedal on the floor slowly.
Annie pressed on the brake. The buggy slowed down.
Jack sighed with relief. The ride was still bumpy, but now at least he could take a good look at the moon. He had never been to such a colorless, barren place. There was no green, no blue, no red, no water, no trees, no clouds, only giant gray rocks and craters, and an American flag.
"Oh, man," said Jack. "That's from the first astronauts who landed on the moon."
"And look, a telescope," said Annie.
She drove near the flag and telescope. Then she put her foot on the brake until the buggy stopped. She pressed a button that said off. Then she and Jack hopped out. They took slow, giant steps to the site of the first moon landing. Beside the flag was a sign. Annie read it aloud.
"Here, men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 A.D. We came in peace for all mankind."
"That's a good message," said Jack.
He handed the moon book to Annie. Then he took out his notebook and pencil to copy the sign.
"Let's leave our own message," said Annie.
"What should we say?" said Jack.
"The same thing," said Annie, "but say we are the first kids."
Jack turned to a new page in his notebook. In big letters, he wrote their message.
"Now we have to sign it," Annie said.
Jack signed his name. Then he passed the notebook and pencil to Annie. She signed her name and passed the notebook back. Jack tore out the piece of paper. He put it by the flag. "Today, the first kids from the planet Earth came to the moon. We came in peace for all children. Jack, Annie." No wind would ever blow the message away. No rain would ever fall on it. It would be there forever, unless someone moved it. Thinking of forever made Jack feel dizzy. He shook his head to clear his thoughts. Then he remembered the time. Had 2 hours passed yet? "I wish I had a watch," he said, standing up. "We might be running out of time."
"Oh, wow, a moon man," said Annie.
"What?"
Jack turned to look at her. She was staring through the telescope. Jack walked over to the telescope. Annie stepped aside so he could look too. Jack gasped. In the distance, something was flying above the ground. It looked like a giant man in a spacesuit.
Chapter 6. High Jump.
"Who is that?"
said Jack.
"I don't know," said Annie, "but we'll soon find out."
She started waving.
"No," said Jack.
He grabbed her arm. "Let's go back to the base before he gets here."
"Why?"
said Annie.
"We don't know who he is," said Jack. "We don't know if he's friendly or mean or what."
"But we can't go back," said Annie. "We haven't found the fourth M thing yet. We won't be able to go home."
"It doesn't matter. We can lock the door at the moon base until he goes away," said Jack. "Then we can get new air tanks."
Jack hurried to the moon buggy. "Come on." He jumped into the driver's seat. Annie gave a little wave to the dot in the sky. Then she climbed into the moon buggy. The buggy took off.
"Careful," said Annie.
They bumped over the rocks as Jack turned the buggy around. Then they zoomed toward the pass. Jack steered around craters and rocks. More than once, the buggy nearly tipped over.
"Whoa, slow down," said Annie.
They were almost at the mountain pass. Suddenly, a cloud of dust flew up in front of them. The ground trembled.
"Watch it,"
cried Annie. Jack couldn't see a thing. He stepped on the brake. The buggy jerked to a stop. The dust settled. A giant rock had fallen into the narrow pass. It was stuck between two walls of rock. They were trapped. Jack quickly found a picture of a giant rock in the moon book. He read aloud,
"Rocks of all sizes crash into the moon from outer space. These rocks are called meteorites."
"We're lucky that meteorite didn't land on us," said Jack.
"Yeah, and I guess it's too big to be the M thing," said Annie.
She had climbed out of the moon buggy and was standing by the meteorite. It was more than twice as tall as she was. Jack looked at the black sky. The flying thing was nowhere in sight. Yet.
"We'll have to jump over it," Annie said.
"Jump? I don't think so," said Jack. "It's too high."
"I'm going to try anyway," said Annie.
"Wait, let's think first," said Jack. But Annie was already backing up.
"One, two, three, go," she shouted, and took giant leaping steps toward the meteorite.
When Annie got close to the rock, she pushed off the ground. Then she flew through space and disappeared behind the meteorite.
"Annie,"
Jack called.
There was no answer. "Oh, brother," Jack said.
He backed up and took off toward the rock. He jumped as high as he could. Then he was flying through space. Jack hit the ground and fell face down into the dust. Jack tried to stand, but his suit was too bulky. He tried to roll over, but his suit made even that impossible.
"Oh, no," he groaned. "Not again."
"Are you here?" asked Annie. "Did you make it?"
"Yes." Jack was relieved to hear her voice, but he couldn't turn his head to see her. He could only hear her over the radio.
"Can you help me up?" he asked.
"Nope,"
said Annie.
"Why not?"
"I fell down too," she said.
"Oh, brother," Jack sighed. "Now we are really in trouble."
He tried to stand again and failed.
"Can you see anything?" he asked.
"Just the sky," said Annie. "Wow, is it weird."
"I'm worried about our air tanks," said Jack. "I feel like it's been 2 hours.
"Jack," said Annie.
"And what about that moon man?" said Jack. "Where did he go to?"
"Jack,"
whispered Annie.
"What?"
"He's here,"
she said.
"The moon man is here."
"What?"
"He's standing above me."
Chapter 7, The Moon Man. Jack's heart nearly stopped. He could hear Annie talking.
"Hi,"
she said.
"We come in peace."
There was silence. Then Jack heard Annie say,
"Thank you. I have to help my brother up now."
A moment later, Annie rolled Jack onto his back. She grabbed his hand and pulled him up.
"Thanks," said Jack once he was standing.
The moon man was a few feet away. His face was hidden by a metal visor. He looked like a spaceman, a huge spaceman, with a giant tank on his back. It was as big as a refrigerator.
"That's a jet pack," said Jack. "I've seen pictures of future astronauts flying with those things. It's like a mini spaceship, right?"
The moon man didn't answer.
"I don't think he can hear us," said Annie. "He's not hooked up to our radio."
"Oh, right," said Jack. "I'll write him a message."
"Good idea,"
said Annie. Jack pulled out his notebook and pencil. He wrote, "We're Jack and Annie. We come in peace from America. Who are you?" Jack handed the notebook and his pencil to the moon man. They looked tiny in his big hands. The moon man looked down at the message. He looked at the tiny pencil. Then he turned the notebook over. Jack and Annie watched as the moon man put the pencil to the paper. He was writing something very carefully. Finally, he gave the notebook back to Jack. Jack and Annie stared at the marks.
"Stars," said Annie. "He drew stars."
Maybe it's a space map, said Jack.
Space map, said Annie. Hey, Jack, map starts with M.
Oh, wow, said Jack. This must be the fourth M thing.
Let's ask him what his map means, said Annie.
She turned around.
We'll never know now, she said.
Why? Jack looked up from the map.
That's why.
Annie pointed. The moon man was flying over the mountains.
Thanks,
Annie cried.
Chapter 8. One Star to Another.
Who was that guy? Said Jack. What does his map mean?
I don't know, said Annie. But let's see if it works.
Jack took a deep breath. Yeah, we better hurry back. I think I'm running out of air. It feels harder to breathe.
For me too, said Annie.
Go slow. Don't breathe too much, said Jack. He and Annie took long floating steps toward the moon base. Jack held his breath as if he were underwater. By the time they got to the white dome, he was ready to burst. Annie pushed a button beside the huge door. It slid open. They hurried into the airlock. The door closed behind them, and the door to the hallway opened. Jack opened the visor of his helmet. He took a long, deep breath and let it out.
Ah, let's get out of these suits, said Annie.
Good idea. Jack was dying to free his arms and legs. As they moved clumsily into the spacesuit storeroom, Jack felt heavy again. He and Annie unlocked each other's helmets, gloves, and boots, and pulled everything off. Then they stepped out of their bulky suits.
Phew,
Jack said. He took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes. It was great to be free, even if he no longer felt as light as a feather.
Hurry, Peanut's waiting, said Annie.
She led the way down the steps to the bright landing chamber.
Yay,
she said softly. Jack was relieved to see the treehouse still there. Soon they'd be heading home. He couldn't wait. Jack and Annie crawled through the treehouse window.
We're back, Peanut, said Annie. Squeak!
Peanut ran to the letter M.
We missed you, said Annie.
She patted the mouse's head.
We met a moon man.
Sorry, Peanut, but you have to move, said Jack. We have to put the map on the M.
Annie gently lifted the mouse off the M. Jack tore the star map out of his notebook. He placed it on the M next to the mammoth bone, the mango, and the moonstone. He sighed, then sat back on his heels.
Hand me the Pennsylvania book, he said.
They needed the Pennsylvania book to get back home. There was silence. Jack turned and looked at Annie.
It's not working, Jack, she said. The book's not here.
What? Was the map the wrong thing?
They looked around the treehouse.
It's definitely not here, said Annie.
Oh, no.
Jack's heart sank. He picked up the star map and stared at it.
Squeak, squeak.
Peanut jumped out of Annie's arms and scurried back to the letter M.
I've got an idea, said Jack.
He reached into his pack and took out his pencil.
What are you doing?
Said Annie.
You know how you draw a constellation? Said Jack. You connect all the stars. What happens if we try that?
He drew a line from one star to another. He kept drawing until all the stars were connected.
Let me see, said Annie.
Jack held the paper out so they could both study it.
It looks like a mouse, said Annie.
Yeah, said Jack.
Is there such a thing as a mouse constellation? Said Annie.
I don't think so, said Jack.
Squeak.
Annie and Jack looked at Peanut.
She was standing on the M.
Oh, wow. Jack, Annie whispered. I think I know what the fourth thing is.
Jack grinned. Me too, he said. It's a mouse, they said together.
Squeak, squeak. Maybe the spell is moonstone, mango, mammoth bone, mouse, said Annie.
Jack touched each M thing in turn as he whispered, moonstone, mango, mammoth bone, mouse.
Let's say it over and over and see what happens, said Annie.
Together they chanted, moonstone, mango, mammoth bone, mouse. Moonstone, mango, mammoth bone, mouse. Suddenly a bright light filled the treehouse. The light got brighter and brighter and brighter. The brightness was blinding and whirling. The air spun with brightness. Then everything was clear. Peanut, the mouse, was gone. And Morgan Le Fay stood before Jack and Annie. Chapter 9, Morgan. Thank you, Morgan said softly. You have freed me from the magician's spell. Jack just stared at her.
You were Peanut? Annie said.
Morgan nodded and smiled.
Really? You were with us all the time? Said Jack. On all our missions?
Morgan nodded again.
Why did we have to go on this mission to find a mouse? Said Jack. If you were always with us.
To break the spell, we had to be on the moon, said Morgan. You could have broken it the minute we arrived.
Oh, that's what you were trying to say, said Annie. We didn't have to leave the moon base at all.
Morgan nodded, smiling.
But the moon man came along to help us, said Annie. He drew a constellation of a mouse. Is he a friend of yours?
Morgan shrugged. Let's just say we had a little talk. He stopped by the moon base while you were out.
The same way you had a talk with the ninja master, right? Said Jack. And the monkey. And the sorcerer.
Morgan nodded. I always squeaked to the ones who helped you.
But how did they understand you? A mouse, said Jack.
Morgan smiled again. Certain wise ones understand the language of little creatures, she said.
I bet it was you who turned the pages of the books, said Annie, to show us where to go next.
Morgan nodded.
But who turned you into a mouse? Said Annie.
Morgan frowned. A certain person who likes to play tricks on me, she said. His name is Merlin.
Merlin? Said Jack. The greatest magician who ever lived.
Morgan sniffed. He's not that great, she said. He doesn't even know I have two brave friends who help me.
Us? Said Annie shyly.
Morgan nodded. And I thank you both with all my heart.
You're welcome, said Jack and Annie.
Morgan handed Annie the Pennsylvania book. Are you ready to go home now? She asked.
Yes, said Jack and Annie.
Annie pointed to a picture of the Frog Creek Woods.
I wish we could go there, she said.
The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster and faster.
Then everything was still, absolutely still,
but only for a moment. Chapter 10, Earth Life. The midnight woods woke up. A breeze rustled the leaves. An owl hooted. The sounds were soft, but very alive. Jack opened his eyes. He pushed his glasses into place. He smiled. Morgan was still with them. He could see her in the moonlight. Her long white hair was shining.
"Morgan, can you and the treehouse stay here?" said Annie. "In Frog Creek?"
"No, I must leave again, I'm afraid," said Morgan. "I've been gone from Camelot for a long time." She handed Jack his pack. She brushed his cheek. Her hand felt soft and cool. "A bit of moon dust still on you," she said. "Thank you, Jack, for your great love of knowledge."
"You're welcome," said Jack.
Morgan tugged on one of Annie's braids.
"And thank you, Annie, for your belief in the impossible."
"You're welcome," said Annie.
"Go home now," said Morgan.
Jack smiled. Home was Earth, that bright, colorful world where everything was alive and always changing.
"Bye, Morgan," said Annie.
She started out of the treehouse. Jack looked back at Morgan.
"Will you come back soon?" he said. "Anything can happen," said Morgan. "The universe is filled with wonders, isn't it, Jack?"
He smiled and nodded.
"Go now,"
Morgan said softly. Jack followed Annie down the rope ladder. He stepped onto the ground. The wind started to blow. The tree started to shake. A loud roar filled Jack's ears. He squeezed his eyes shut. He covered his ears. Then everything was silent and still. Jack opened his eyes. The ladder was gone. He looked through the leaves and branches of the giant oak tree. Where the treehouse had been was only moonlight now.
"Bye, Morgan,"
he whispered sadly.
"Bye, Peanut," said Annie.
Jack and Annie stared at the top of the tree for a long moment.
"Ready?"
said Annie. Jack nodded. They started for home. The midnight air felt cool and moist. It was filled with the soft sounds of Earth life. Jack and Annie left the Frog Creek woods. They started down their street. Annie glanced up at the sky.
"The moon looks really far away, doesn't it?"
It did, thought Jack. It was.
"I wonder how the Moon Man can be up there all alone," said Annie.
"What do you mean?" said Jack.
"I mean, who helps him put on his spacesuit?" said Annie. "Who helps him get up when he falls down?"
"And who is he?" added Jack.
"Who do you think he was?" said Annie.
"He must be a scientist or an astronaut from Earth," said Jack.
"No, I think he's an alien," said Annie, "from another galaxy."
Jack scoffed. "What makes you say that?"
"I just feel it," said Annie.
"Wrong," said Jack. "There's no proof that aliens exist."
"Maybe not now," said Annie.
"But don't forget, we were in the future."
"Oh, brother," said Jack.
They crossed their yard and climbed their back steps. Annie tiptoed inside the house. Jack followed her. Before he shut the door, he glanced up at the moon.
"Was Annie right?" he wondered. "Could the Moon Man have come from another galaxy?"
Morgan's words came back to him.
"The universe is filled with wonders, isn't it, Jack?" "Good night, Moon Man," Jack whispered. Then he closed the door.
Hello, this is Mallory Lohr. I'm Mary Pope Osborne's editor at Random House Children's Books. Mary Pope Osborne and I are in the studio to talk about the Magic Treehouse series and answer some questions from readers and listeners like you. Mary, some of our listeners might not know about your varied background. Can you talk about some of the exciting things you did before you started writing? How does your background influence the Magic Treehouse series?
Well, when I was growing up, I was in the military. My dad was an officer who lived in many different places around the world, and our family traveled, and we had so many different environments that I became very used to changing scenery and new adventures in different places. I never knew I could be an author, but I had a very vivid imagination. So I was always playing with my brothers and making up stories. And I think that the combination of travel and imagination sort of threw me into the theater when I was a young adult. And I studied theater and I acted in the summers and I became very enamored with the whole idea of constructing different worlds and living in them. Then I discovered in college the world of other cultures and world religions. I changed my studies to learn about other parts of the world. And when I graduated from the University of North Carolina, I traveled to the Middle East and to Asia and spent almost a year traveling through that part of the world and having big adventures there. And later I came back and I lived in California and Washington, D.C. And when I was in Washington, a play came to town to Ford's Theater, and an actor from New York was starring in the play, playing the part of Jesse James. And I was in the audience, and just literally from the audience, I sort of fell in love with the actor on the stage. And to make a long story short, I married him a year later, and Will and I moved to New York to live together there. And then I still wasn't sure what I wanted to do for a career, but I tried many different things, and I read a great deal, and I kept searching for, you know, what was my thing, my career, my voice. And then one day I started writing, and that was about 21 years ago, and I've never stopped. I've devoted my life, actually, now to being a children's author, and I feel that it's the perfect job for me. And then as far as Magic Treehouse goes, you know, I wrote probably 20 books before I started that series. And a lot of those books had a great deal to do with mythology and history. So that sort of fed into my wanting to do a series where children go to different places in time. Also, I have to say that I have two wonderful brothers, and one of them is my twin. And that because we traveled a lot as children, we were each other's best friends. And we always played together and played make-believe games and had a lot of adventures in our imaginations together. So it was natural for me to choose a brother and a sister, Jack and Annie, to have these adventures in the Magic Treehouse. And then again, because I love travel, I decided here I could travel as an author all the time, just never leave my house or the library and do all the research and be traveling in my imagination.
What made you decide to start writing children's books? What was it like when you started? How did you know when you had gotten it?
It wasn't as if I had just sat down and said, okay, now I'm going to be an author. What happened was I started writing down memories one day of my childhood, and I thought I was just writing down these memories for the sake of remembering, and that, you know, as I got older, I might forget these things. And I would write down a little bit every day. And one day, this sort of miraculous thing happened where the character in my memory stopped being me and it started to be someone else. And this girl was such a strong, determined voice. And I gave her a name and I discovered she was living in a terrible situation. Her brother was very ill. And this is how a character evolved out of me in a situation that was fiction. But I wrote every day. I was obsessed with writing down this particular story. And every night I'd read to Will, my husband, who is an actor, as I mentioned, so that he, using his imagination, got very caught up in this story. And I almost felt like I was just writing it for him. We'd laugh or we'd cry over the story. And then finally I finished it. And I said, well, what now? Do I just put this in a drawer and forget about it? Or do I show it to someone else? Which can be a really scary thing for an author, to take it outside your home and show it to a friend or someone you know who might be able to help you. But I took the risk. I showed it to a friend, and she actually knew a children's book agent and showed it to him. And before I knew it, he was representing me. And then before I knew it, my book had been sold to a publisher. It all happened so quickly. Suddenly, I knew that I had to really learn how to write. So the editor at that house wanted a revision, and I studied writing, and I took that story, and I think I made it better. I rewrote all of it. I'm an avid rewriter of anything I start working on. And that became my first book. And from then on, you couldn't stop me from writing. It's all I ever wanted to do. It was called Run, Run as Fast as You Can, and it was a novel for young adults. In fact, I published 4 novels for young adults in the beginning of my career, and since then have moved into a lot more with mythology, history, and fantasy.